Hey guys, welcome back. Today we're going to talk about group therapy, why it's essential for psychological growth. I mean, how many times have I heard this sentiment, something like, yeah, it would be cool if there was a gym I could go to work on my psychological issues, you know, like a place where I could work on my boundary. So when I'm out with a girl, I'm not constantly thinking about what she's thinking about me. Well, there is a gym for that. It's called group therapy. When it's run properly, which it pretty much never is. I mean, yeah, the popular depiction of group is it's like for spinsters who wear ant theme shirts, and that's true. But, you know, the popular depiction of bodybuilders is, you know, is a bunch of meatheads who would take years, trade years of their life for cap delts. But that doesn't mean you couldn't benefit from some squats, right? So the general idea that I'm going to communicate to you guys here is that individual therapy is where you get reoriented. It's how you change your direction. I just want to take you and turn you a little bit. It doesn't even need to be a lot, right? Just a little bit. But you walk on that road and you're going to be in a way different place than you would be if you stayed where you were, you know, in the direction you're initially going in. Yeah, so individual therapy, you get reoriented, and group is where you grow. Group is maybe not sufficient for growth, but it is definitely necessary. You know, to go back to that gym analogy, what do you do if you don't know what you're doing in the gym? You go to a personal trainer first, right? You get the form down. You figure out what you need to work on, where your focus needs to be. And then after that, then you go in the gym on your own and go hang out with the other gym bros and learn from them. Propitiate each other's bro energy, also known as broing out. And yeah, you're going to grow a little bit in individual therapy too, but by its nature, it can only help so much. In fact, I think this is where the analogy breaks down, because, you know, you could theoretically just go to your personal trainer and get huge, but I don't know. Could you? I mean, what's the point of going to the gym if you're not going to bro out? I mean, let's be honest about that. Okay, so first I'm going to talk about what is psychological growth. I'm going to use my world famous damn analogy for this, and this will give us a backdrop on which we'll be able to see more clearly why group is beneficial. Then I'm going to talk about why group is specifically beneficial, because it focuses on communication mainly. I mean, that's the main reason. But both parts of it, the talking and the listening and communication, I'm going to say this throughout this video, communication is the concrete manifestation of your psychology. Fix your communication about an issue and you fix your issue. And also how group helps with resistance, recognizing it, overcoming it. And if you're not growing, the main reason why you're not growing is because of resistance. We're going to say more about that. First, let's go to my drawing board here. I'm going to do my awesome dam analogy. So this is a picture of a dam, which you probably don't see, but I'm going to put water in here. And I like the dam analogy because the water is always libido, right? If you have a dream and there's a lot of water, the dream represents your libido, which is just your psychic energy. It includes sexuality, as Freud says, but it's not just sexuality, right? I'm a Jungian. I think there's other things there, like archetypes and emotions and memories and just a lot of great things. And your challenge in psychological health is to build a dam for the water, to make it useful, right? To make the river useful. To use what is naturally there, to use that libidinal energy to light up the buildings, to light up the cities around you. And here the dam is yourself, your capital S self. Maybe in more idiomatic expression, it would just be character. Your identity, perhaps. There's lots of different ways we could put on that. And how do you build a dam is with bricks, right? You put one brick on top of each other. It's probably just poured concrete, but whatever. Let's just say you put one brick on top of each other. Now, where does this brick come from? Well, there's a process to building each brick. And let's go through that now. The first step, I call it zero. There's zero brick. You're just unaware of the issue. The second, we'll call that a quarter brick, is, well, you begin to be aware of the issue. Oh, there's an issue there that I didn't know I had. I need to acknowledge that I have an issue first if I'm going to overcome it. Of course, this is one of the many reasons why positive psychology, mindset kind of training, you know, affirmations, positive thinking, why it's really not going to help you, because you got to be aware of the issue first. A lot of growth doesn't feel necessarily good, but it is growth. Because you can see objective, you know, criteria in your life improving. Okay, so after you're aware of your issue, in order to fully develop it into a brick, to fully integrate it into your life. Now, you don't have to go through all these stages exactly, but usually if you really want to get the most to build the strongest brick, it's good to. So this is when you go and talk about that issue in therapy. This is where you talk about facts, feeling, meaning, responsibility, as we discuss here. How to take an issue and talk through it in a healthy way, in a way to integrate it more and more. Now you can go from therapy just to a brick, but there's another process here, three quarters, and this is a group. And then after the group, once you get good talking about an issue in group, then you can integrate it, which can mean a bunch of different things. And so why group is so important in part is because it takes an issue from that you have in therapy and it gets you to integrate it into your life. Where most people get stuck in therapy is here at going from being unaware of a problem that you have, which often feels like, you know, you're just going in circles, or you have a birthday. Let's say you turn 29 and you think, you know, I feel exactly the same way on this 29th birthday that I felt in my 28th birthday. I feel the same. I'm doing the same things. I have the same amount of money in my bank account. I get $3,500. For some reason, I just can't get above $3,500. Like, I spend some money. I do something stupid. It feels like something else is in charge. You know, those videos of those bears, you know, they release from captivity. And when the bear was in captivity, it would just go around in a circle. They release it from captivity. It's in the wild. It just continues to go around in that circle. And you watch that video and you think, like, you know, I kind of feel like that bear, you know, what's going on here? That's why group is so important, because it helps with the recognition of resistance, and it helps to go from taking an issue from therapy and integrating it. It helps bridge this gap, which is very easy to get stuck on. In fact, where my clients get stuck, where a lot of clients get stuck, is they're good at talking about an issue in therapy, but can you really integrate it into your life? Group is a stepping stone from therapy to real life. You can't just change how you talk in group. You can't just change how you talk in individual therapy. Excuse me. You need to change how you talk, how you approach that issue in life. So, how exactly does group bridge this gap? As we previously said, communication is the concrete manifestation of your psychology. You fix your communication about an issue, and you fix the issue. Now, you have many healthy needs, I'm sure, but the fundamental need psychologically you have is to identify a feeling, feel it, feel that feeling, and then communicate about it, preferably in a non-cringe way, in a way where if other people heard you communicate about that issue, they wouldn't think you're being emotional or you had a feeling or this is something that you learned in therapy at all. If they looked at you communicate this feeling and you had an ant theme shirt, it just wouldn't make any sense. That's the output, or that's the idea. And there's two aspects of communication. There's talking and there's listening. First, let's go into why talking is important, how group helps with how you talk and communicate that way. I mean, maybe this is obvious, but I think this is important to go into. So group challenges you to talk because you show up and need to express what you feel, and because it's a group, you do it in a way that others can connect with. It challenges you to walk that razor's edge. That we all need to walk in all communication, the one between having respect for what you feel and how you feel, and respect for how other people hears you, right? So you show up in a group one time and maybe your share, it's too much for the group. You forget yourself and you get lost in the performance, and You feel like you're just doing it to make the guys laugh. You're just saying something funny to make the guys laugh. You know, which is, of course, this is exactly how you perform in your relationships in real life. Group is like this concrete microcosm of real life. I mean, I've had clients pull me aside and say, yeah, Mark, I don't know if this group is working too much because I do exactly this when I show up in group. I'm just saying what I think other people want me to hear. It's like, yeah, that's the point. That's the challenge. You have your issue triggered here in group in a measured way so you can work on it and practice integrating it on a consistent basis. So the next time you show up, your focus is more on your emotion, what you feel. You know, maybe take a moment beforehand to consider what is your situation that you want to talk about. What is the feeling you have? What does that feeling mean to you? Exactly how we talk about it. Exactly how we talk through emotions here. Right, and then you clear up this communication in group, and I think you will find, without much planning, that your communication, your identity, where your identity begins and another's identity ends, that becomes more clear. And each time you put those points down in your psyche, it's painful, right? It doesn't feel good necessarily. Right. Group is a measured microcosm. I just feel like I need to repeat this. It's vital. Group is a measured microcosm of how to solve any relationship problem, which is to focus on what you feel and the most effective way to communicate that, which also happens to be the healthiest way to communicate that. Right. As Jung says, you know, I'm going to bring this up, point up next. As Jung says, all communication is the reconciliation of opposites. Though as I think, as you see, it only seems like opposites from the lens, from the prism of your neurosis. They're not really opposites. Okay. So group helps with your communication, how you talk. Group also helps with listening, which is, of course, the other aspect of communication. Now, in the format of at least the group I run and most groups, they do it in a little bit different way, but it challenges you to listen because people are encouraged to respond to what someone else has shared, not their experience. Yeah, if you relate with somebody's experience, that's fine. You're not going to get kicked out of a group, but what's more important is relate to the emotion of what somebody else has shared. Identify that emotion in you. Where do you have that feeling? Now you process that feeling from the perspective of your own experience with that feeling, right? Group challenges you in a sense to listen in the proper way, which isn't just the words, yes, but it's also the emotion. What is somebody really saying? And how do you relate with it? Right? Because everybody has the same emotions. Maybe we experience them in a little bit different ways, but our emotions are all the same. That's why we can all go. It's why we can all go to a movie. Bunch of different people from a bunch of diverse backgrounds. We go to a movie and we can all relate with it, even though it's the same story. And it's a fun challenge, right? It's a fun challenge when someone is talking in group and, you know, you find yourself thinking, which of course happens, you find yourself thinking, like, what is this idiot saying? I have no, like, we are just totally different. I have no idea what he's talking about. Our two lives could not be any more different. That's the fantasy. That's the neurotic fantasy of separation, of you're not really like him. You are like him. Maybe not to the same extent. Maybe not with the same issue. But you are. And that's the challenge, is to say, how do I identify with? Because I think if you have a difficult time, well, we're going to talk about it more with, you know, getting over resistance. But part of your difficulty in identifying with somebody else is your difficulty with your own resistance, your own unconscious fear. I'm going to get to it. Right, so now it just keeps going because it challenges you to communicate in other ways, because when people respond to you and what you said, you listen to their response. Do they really get what you were saying? If they really didn't get what you were saying, it's not on them, right? It's on you to communicate that in a more clear way next time. So that's the challenge. Talk about that same issue in a little bit different way. The feedback is never explicit. It's always implicit. Ideally, I know there are lots of groups where the feedback is explicit or people could just jump in. I think that's horrific and not the right way to run group. I'm not going to go through the exact format and rules for my group, but That's one of those things where I think really not helpful. People can give feedback before and after the group session. That's fine. And even then, only when somebody asks for it. Because it's not about feedback. The feedback is implicit. The feedback is there. There is more than enough feedback in the group. Are you going to pay attention to it? If you're not going to pay attention to that feedback, asking for feedback is probably not going to help. Right, so this indicates the other reason why group is beneficial, because it goes from zero to unaware to being aware. It helps you deal with resistance. Resistance is unconscious fear. You know, conscious fear is easy. You have a fear, you feel it, you feel that anxiety, and you face it, you do it on a consistent basis, and more or less you're going to overcome that fear, usually, if what that situation really is a good trigger for that fear, which usually it isn't. You know, I have a video on the problem with exposure therapy, go check that out. But there's unconscious fear as well. A fear that you don't even feel, or you do feel it in a way, but it just feels normal. Right? Expressed as, you know, the bear walking around in a circle even though he's not in captivity. Why do I feel the same way on my 29th birthday as I did on my 28th birthday? Why can I not get over $3,500 in my checking account, for example? And this is why listening is so important in group, is because when you listen to, like, you're unconscious when you listen to others, and group is this, right? It's a safe place. It's a safe space where people can be more honest than they typically would be. When people are being honest, when they talk about how they mismanage emotions, you will eventually relate. You'll say, yes, I mismanage emotions in that way. You will be stirred. You're sitting there with your arms crossed, staring at the clock. You will be stirred eventually. Somebody talks about how they try to get validation from their girlfriend, and you begin to realize, oh, wait, that's what I do. And, you know, in this different situation, but I see what he's feeling. You know, he was honest about how he was looking for his girlfriend for validation. That made me see how I did it. So it helps you recognize the resistance, and it also helps you to, it alleviates the pain of resistance, which helps you to recognize it, because a huge block to resistance is that it is painful. But if you see somebody else going through it, you know, just like that Michael Jackson song, You Are Not Alone, it's easier to manage the pain. You know, seeing other people go through it is a great analgesic. And plus, I mean, the main issue, or the main takeaway there is, when you see other people have your issues, then it's no longer your issue. Right, it's an issue that you have, you know, night and day, just totally different. Totally different. So when the group is run well, it's effectively like those Caesar Milan dog camps. Right, he takes a coddled pit bull and introduces him to a pack of dogs who are well regulated. Right, and so the dysregulated dogs, simply by being around the regulated dogs, the healthy dogs, he begins to regulate himself and improve. Of course, the big difference is we have a consciousness, so we create our own pack through our own consciousness. And in a sense, yeah, we're the dogs, but we don't need Caesar Milan there. We have our own consciousness. Our consciousness is what creates the Caesar Milan that helps regulate us. Or, you know, put another way, group is the family you never had. Group is the family you never had. Which is what cults say. That's true. But cults cut you off from your family. Group, at least the way I run it, is a stepping stone to your family. And when you're done with group, because you can begin to run your own group. Right? The group that is your family. Now you can have therapy sessions effectively with your mom. It's not going to look the same. You're not going to bring up all the same things in exactly the same way, but pretty much, yeah, everything you talk about in therapy, guess what? You can talk about that with your mom. You leave out some things, but that's the end point here. And, yeah, you know, like, as you guys know, I complain a lot about therapy. It's because it's bad. And I need to use bad modern therapy as a contrast for what I do, right? It helps to show the contrast. Here's CBT. They just give you a bunch of packets. Here's like the Rogerian, you know, traditional therapy approach, or not even traditional therapy, just like the constant validation, constant talking about issues without going anywhere. Never-ending therapy. I like to use that as a helpful contrast for what I do, but, you know, as bad as individual therapy has become, group has become way worse. I mean, this is obvious, right? Because any lack of awareness in the one-on-one dyad therapy just gets magnified in the group, right? More people, more issues, more autonomy means chances for derailment happens a lot easier. And what this means is that people with the least amount of awareness in most groups, people with the least amount of awareness hijack the sessions with their complaints. Their complaints about service level topics. And the therapists don't know what to do because they're not sure. They're not even sure anything went wrong in the first place. I mean, is something even wrong? I mean, hey, people are there talking about emotions. They're expressing their emotions. Well, that's inherently healthy, isn't it? You know, it's so funny that like the 2016 meltdown when Trump was elected, I was in New York. I wasn't running any groups. I mean, I was in grad school. I was shadowing. I was helping out with them. I wasn't running them. But, you know, I just remember people thinking like, oh, you know, these people who are melting down in the street, they need to go to therapy. Well, you know, the funny thing is they did go to therapy, but because therapy isn't a real field yet, it's not a field unified by fundamental principles without which therapy wouldn't be a field in the first place, because therapy isn't that, they did go to therapy and their issue got worse. It's like going to a medieval barber and like, you know, getting leeches put on you. That's where therapy is. They did go to therapy. And you know what they did in these group therapies? They complained about Trump. They complained about Trump, and the psychologist who was running the group afterwards would say something like, oh, that was really great. Everybody was emoting very well. In fact, that's one of the rules in my group is no politics. You can talk about a political situation vaguely, only to reference your emotion to it and talk about what it means and how that emotion is your responsibility. But I would go, you know, to these groups and in 2016, when the election, everybody was just complaining about Trump over and over again, and it got worse. Yeah, people see that rule. Oh, don't talk about politics. Yeah, that's a good idea, Mark. Because what if members of the group get in an argument about politics? No, that would be healthy. That would be way better than my real fear, which is what if people in the group start to agree about politics? Then they really start to think that Trump is the problem. And this is not an endorsement of Trump, obviously. I need to say that. It's so sad that I need to say that. This is obviously not an endorsement of Trump. But Trump is not the reason for your psychological issue. Trump triggers your psychological issue, yes. So now talk about that issue that you have. But group doesn't do this. Right? And, you know, I could just go into stories of the group therapy class that I took in college or in grad school, and nobody, it's just not preparing you to deal with things well. So, yeah, I mean, you know, what I do in my group is a lot better. I mean, it's really the best group possible. I mean, I really want to be the best group that has ever existed in the history of therapy, in the history of group therapy, because I want the value. Now, what that means is the value that you put into the group is positively correlated to the value that you get out of it, right? You put in one point of value, whatever that is, you get back two. That happens every time. Now, this is how life works. This is how life is, but you can't see that all the time because of the complexes. So you go to group to work on those complexes. So life becomes more like that. Now, the caveats for the group are, I can't do it for you. Right? This is going to take effort on your part. I can't sit there and make you grow on your own. You really need to want to change if you're going to change. I know that kind of goes without saying, but it needs to be, you know, emphasized with. You know, I do consultations with guys all the time, and I can tell you're not ready to change. I can tell you still want more time alone with your neuroses. There are a bunch of indications, you know, and it's fine. Like, I say that with a lot of empathy. We're all there with something, right? We all have that issue that we know we need to change, that we're just not ready to change yet. I need to go to the doctor for my wrist issue And I'm not ready. I don't know. Like, I still have to bitch and moan about it more. I still need more, you know, sympathy from my wife. You know, who freaking knows? I'm just not ready. So that's the one caveat is it, you're going to need to want to change. The other caveat is it's going to be painful. You know, the most common complaint I get from guys in my group is, Mark, I guess my life is getting better and my relationships are improving, but I'm in a lot of pain. Well, okay, so when you felt good, life wasn't working out, and now that you feel pain, life is going well. Okay, so what does that tell you about what feels good and what feels bad to you? What does that tell you? And yeah, there's bad pain, but there's good pain too, right? Bad pain is just not asking a girl out and just living with that constant, you know, drone of anxiety, that hum of anxiety in the back of your mind. Good pain is you ask a girl out and now you see what her face looks like when you ask her out. And this reminds you of all your issues, right? Girls are mirrors. Now you can see yourself and all your issues and that's painful. Well, you know, there's good pain and bad pain. Can't do it for you. It will be painful. joinanimus.com/schedule. We do free consultations, which I need to say again. I know consultation has become a euphemism for a sales call. But I do, in fact, consult with you. I begin every consultation the same. You tell me what's going on with you, and I'll give you whatever feedback I can. Really, I want to do is let you know what your loop is, what your unconscious pattern that leads to the symptoms in your life, right? Your problem is not procrastination. That is a symptom of your problem. I want to talk with you about the unconscious emotional steps that you make that lead you to this problem that is procrastination, the symptom. And then afterwards, if you want to hear more about what I do, then we can talk about that. If nothing else, you know, I want to make these videos more interactive for you to go through the motions that I go through here. In fact, let's do that. You know, I was going to end this now, but let's do that. Let's go through an example. If you want to stop watching now, that's fine. Let's go through an example of how this works. Okay, so you're going through this process of building a brick. You go from unaware, which is no brick, to a quarter brick, aware, to now you need to take that issue. Now you can think about it on your own. You can meditate. You can journal. That's still a quarter brick. You need to talk about that issue with one particular person. Usually it's a therapist. Something like that. Maybe a mentor. To become ever more aware of that issue, then take that issue to a group and then integrate that group into your life or integrate that issue in your life. So let's just go through how this works. So this is what we go through the process. So this is here in therapy, but you can also, you know, journal about it, meditate on this process. So first you talk about the facts. What are the facts of this situation? Then your feeling. What feeling do you have about this situation? Then what does this feeling mean? What is the meaning behind this feeling? Not the facts, then responsibility. Okay, so let's go through the example that I was kind of going through before, just to integrate this and and make it complete. So the feeling is, I just turned 29. And maybe this isn't the feeling. I just turned 29 and I feel exactly the same way that I did when I was 28. Right? Like my relationships are all the same, doing the same thing. I feel the same. I can't get above $3,500 in my bank account, all that. Okay. So what is the situation? The situation may be, so this is going from zero to one quarter, just being aware. The situation may be that you are in a career that you never wanted. And maybe you feel like you were pushed into that career because your parents wanted you to have that career, or at least you kind of felt like that's what they were doing and you didn't want to upset them. And so now you're in this career that you never really wanted to have. In fact, you never really thought about what your career was going to be. You just realized, you know, I'm just going to do something to make my parents happy. But it's not even to make my parents happy, just to make my parents not get upset. Just the path of least resistance. So yeah, I got to this place when I'm 28 and 29 where I'm supposedly getting established in my career. But then I realized, wait, I didn't even want to do this. This isn't even my interest. I mean, this is something I could do, which is a totally normal thing to a total normal feeling to have when you're 28, 29, 30 is, okay, I have a career now. It's getting going. Now I need to make it my own thing. This is all it's an indication of. It doesn't mean you need to start your life over and move to Brooklyn and become a sculptor, right? I mean, usually people do that. That's usually the wrong thing. I'm getting off track. Okay, so what is the fact again? I forget. The fact is you picked a career to not upset your parents. Okay. Now, what is the feeling you have about that fact? It could be something like, well, you feel victimized by your parents. Now, whether you are a victim, don't try to rationalize all this stuff. What do you feel? You feel like a victim and you're pissed. You're pissed because your parents push you in this career path that you never really thought about. You never really talked about with them. They just kind of pushed you there and you felt like you had to not upset them. You wanted their approval, which is adaptive for a time. It's very adaptive for children to want their parents' approval. This is why we have adolescence, to break you out of this. That's why rebellion is really helpful. Okay, so your feeling is you're a pissed off victim. What does that feeling mean to you? Well, you know, this can take a while in therapy, but let's just give common examples here. It could mean that it means that people have control over your life. That's what it means. It means that you are a child. And what you could do here in the step about meaning, talking through your emotions in a healthy way, you know, based on what an emotion is, you can talk about memories that you have where you felt that way. You know, really palpable memories, like really prominent memories in your mind where you felt like your parents had control over you. Maybe that has nothing to do with your career, just other situations. Really, the head fake here is we're just trying to get you to sit with this emotion. Yes, you are a pissed off victim. That's how you feel. I know you want to change that. I know it's not quote unquote right, but in order to work through it, in order to take responsibility for your life, that's a great sentiment. That's a great goal. But before you do that, you need to take responsibility for your emotions. Otherwise, any responsibility that you take for your life is going to be in vain. It's going to be a delusion, and you're going to become more disconnected from other people. The neurosis is going to get worse. Okay, so that's the meaning. The meaning is other people have control over your life, over my life. Excuse me, I'm a child. Now, let's take responsibility, not for the situation, but for the feeling. So we employ the BCR test, the benefit, the contribution, and how you relate if there is a conflict here, which there kind of is. I mean, there's a conflict in your mind at the very least. So how do you benefit from being a victim? Well, when you're a victim, you get to blame your parents for things that don't go well. This may have nothing to do with your career. Like if your girlfriend breaks up with you, if you're a victim of your parents, you get to somewhere in the back of your mind blame them. So now you don't have to look at your issues and why the girl broke up with you. Oh, it's because my parents are boomers and they never prepared me, right? Their life was too easy. You know, good times create weak men kind of thing. And I'm just a victim of that. So I never learned how to deal with girls properly. Okay. So that's one benefit, in a sense. You get to continue to live with this issue by just, blaming. I mean, it doesn't benefit you in the traditional sense, but victimhood, that could be a familiar feeling that you go to, right? Possibly linked to that memory or several memories that we may have talked about when we discussed meaning. So that's how you benefit. How do you contribute? Well, the here it's, I think, pretty obvious, right? The contribution is the same as the benefit. And there's probably more contribution, you know, for doing this, but I'm just giving you like rough examples here. The contribution is clearly I continue to blame my parents. I contribute to this feeling of being a pissed off victim by contributing to blame or by continuing to blame my parents. And how do you relate if there is a conflict here? Now, there isn't a conflict in a traditional sense, not an existential one, but there is a psychological one, right? The conflict between you and your parents. Okay, so a good way to go about this is to ask what, let's say you're right, right? And your parents did push you along in a career. You may be wrong. It doesn't matter. In the court of law, whether you're objectively right or wrong matters. In therapy, it's just, what do you feel is right? If that feeling isn't an indication of reality, we're only going to see that by processing that feeling, by just assuming that you're right. Okay. So your parents pushed you in a certain career path. What were they thinking? Let's try to be a little bit generous here. What were they thinking? Well, they wanted you to be successful, or they at least wanted to give you, put you in a position where you were most likely to be successful. So yeah, they're going to push you along a certain career path. Maybe not the right thing to do, but we can understand, right? We can understand if we're being, generous. Great. So now where do you do that? Where do you want somebody to be a certain way so you avoid certain negative feelings about yourself? Here with your parents, it's the negative feeling of having your son or daughter grow up and not be successful. So where do you do that? Well, maybe when your kids, for example, misbehave in public. Okay, not that it's right for your children to misbehave, but when they misbehave, you get embarrassed. So when you reprimand them, when you yell at them, yeah, it's okay to get angry if your kids misbehave, but you're putting extra anger on that because of the embarrassment. Right? You don't want to feel embarrassment, so you want your kids to be a certain way so you don't feel embarrassed. Yeah, you obviously don't want your kids to misbehave anyways, but you got to admit, you got to discern there that you are putting extra baggage onto them. Okay, so that's where you do that, right? Now that's proper form, right? That's going through the personal trainer and getting proper form, knowing exactly what to focus on. And then, well, then how do you integrate this? How do you turn this into a brick? Well, there's going to be lots of ways. One way that just jumped out to me there as we were talking through this is it's okay to reprimand your children. It's okay to get angry even at your children. But when you feel the extra anger because of your embarrassment, because you're in public and you want your kids to be a certain way so you don't feel certain unhealthy, certain negative emotions like embarrassment, when you put that extra anger on them from the embarrassment, apologize. That would be a good way. One way in particular to integrate. Not the only way, but a good way. Okay, so I had to go through all that. How did we get on that? Oh yeah, so do a consultation with me. Find out more what's going on with you. And, you know, I really want this to be as interactive for you as possible. My clients aren't just the people who pay me money. My clients are also the people who pay me in their time and attention in these videos. So I want you to at least begin to work through this on your own. And there is a lot you can do on your own. I really think that I'll be able to help you just because of my experience in this. And I can really nail it down for you and show you, you know, just get really specific and make this as clear as possible. Not going to make it any easier, but I can at least make it more clear for you. JoinAnimus.com/schedule. Thank you guys for watching and for listening. And I wish you all the joy and pain that comes from seeing your life reflected in that of another.